Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of mcpmag.com, and I thank you for listening. Here's what we'll cover in this episode for the week of October 15th. An October Patch Tuesday update. 10 overlooked features of Windows Server 2008. SAP acquires business objects. And Symantec's senior research manager, Ben Greenbaum, gives us an assessment of the latest Patch Tuesday releases. Before we head to the first Redmond Radio news segment, let's break for a message from our sponsor, Case.
Yeah, IT Detective Agency.
I had to see you. I just can't take it anymore. Having to go out to all the remote locations to patch machines and roll out Vista.
Case is the leading systems management appliance company. Their customers typically install in one day, at one-third the cost of software alternatives. You need to get to KACE.com immediately.
Everything in one appliance. I'm glad you're on the case.
Case. Systems management. Done.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast roundup of Microsoft news and other IT happenings. Next week, we'll have news from the Tech Mentor Show in Las Vegas. For now, let's jump right into last week's news from Redmond. Microsoft rolled out 6 security bulletins on its Patch Tuesday last week, one fewer than expected. There are 4 critical patches, which are all new fixes in the respect that they weren't previously known by the public. Further, instead of 3, there are now just 2 patches that Redmond deemed important. One important patch mentioned in the advance notice but dropped from the release would have dealt with potential spoofing attacks in which disguised malicious agents could enter the system under false pretenses. Also, one of the important patches dealing with denial of service risks in every OS version should really be labeled Important Plus, meaning slightly less than critical but far more important than indicated. In related news, Microsoft has shouldered some responsibility for a recently discovered security hole in Windows XP and Windows Server 2003 that uses Internet Explorer 7 as the attack vector. Microsoft has announced a forthcoming update to fix the vulnerability. The company last week released Microsoft Security Advisory 943521, detailing the exploit. The vulnerability is specific to XP, Windows 2003, and IE 7. Vista and earlier versions of IE are safe, according to Microsoft. The vulnerability affects how Windows deals with URLs or uniform resource identifiers and could lead to an unsuspecting user clicking on a hyperlink that results in a malicious code being run on the user's machine. The flaw was apparently introduced in the upgrade from IE 6 to IE 7 and changes how Windows parses URIs, causing it to potentially choose the wrong application to handle a protocol. With that news, it appears a trend is emerging and isn't escaping the purview of security experts. Seems that for the second time in as many months, Microsoft's Patch Tuesday has given way to what's being called Exploit Wednesday. In September, it was Clippy's Revenge. Last Wednesday, an exploit related to Microsoft Word came to light. This month, the IE flaw, soon after Patch Tuesday. These incidents suggest ongoing efforts by hackers to anticipate what will be patched and an attempt to pounce on weaknesses immediately after getting up to speed on an exploit's implications. Writer Jabalani LaFall explores this further in his analysis piece online at redmondmag.com's security portal. And in our last bit of news, Microsoft has added a digital party invitation service to its suite of Windows Live web services. The new tool is called Events, and it works much like IAC's Evite does. Users choose one of dozens of pre-designed templates, a birthday, cocktail party, Chinese New Year, and they fill in the time and place of their event, add a map, type in invitees' email addresses, and hit send. The person planning the party must have a Windows Live ID, such as a Hotmail email address, but guests don't need one to respond to the invitation. The event page keeps track of who's attending and who's not and offers a discussion board tool for uploading photos and linking the event to personal calendars like Outlook's or Apple's iCal. The service is closely tied to Microsoft's other web tools. Users can click links to blogs about the event on the Spaces social network site and get driving directions from live search. And that's it from Redmond. Do make sure to check out Keith Ward's analysis of 10 most overlooked features of Windows 2008 on the RedmondMag.com site. Before we head to more IT news from the Newswire, up next is a short interview with Symantec Senior Research Manager Ben Greenbaum on last week's Patch Tuesday, right here on Redmond Radio. This week, I have a new segment that I'd like to try out with you guys. Every second Tuesday of the month, as you know, is Patch Tuesday. Well, after that rolls around, I'll have someone from the security community give us a take on the impact of the fixes. This month, here's a quick interview with Symantec Senior Research Manager, Ben Greenbaum.
I have Ben Greenbaum, Senior Research Manager with Symantec's Security Response Center. He's here to talk to us about the October Patch Tuesday. Welcome, Ben.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Hey, tell me something about this week's Patch Tuesday release. Is there anything unusual?
There's one update for Internet Explorer that contains fixes for four issues. Interestingly, three of them all deal with the same potential impact, which is that an attacker could put false or misleading information in the address bar of Internet Explorer 5, 6, or 7. This could be used very effectively in future phishing attacks, allowing an attacker to mislead the user into thinking they're on a trusted site when, in fact, they are viewing a attacker-controlled site. Aside from that, we've got client-side remote code execution vulnerabilities that have been patched in Outlook Express and Windows Mail, as well as in Internet Explorer. All of these packages ship by default with every Windows operating system version, and therefore are to be considered high priority for all of Microsoft users.
Okay. Here's something that I was wondering about. It seems like remote code execution flaws are always seem to crop up. Are those fairly worrisome? And is there like a certain time frame which customers should be patched up? Or do you think, or are there already safeguards at most companies that exist for taking care of these RCE exploits?
Remote code execution exploits are generally the worst possible impact for a vulnerability. It allows an attacker to gain complete control over the target computer system. That control is granted at the privilege level of the user in the case of these client-side remote code execution vulnerabilities, but still that is a major concern for any user. There are other solutions that help mitigate this kind of threat, a good security package, IDS in the case of these client-side file-based exploitations, antivirus solutions are certainly recommended. The best policy is the quickest patch policy possible. You asked about a relative time frame. In all cases, that's going to be as soon as possible.
What should listeners be paying attention to in the next month or so? What's really important as far as on the security front?
There's nothing specifically coming up in the next month that we're aware of. Of course, attackers don't give us the benefit of pre-announcing their intentions. However, as always, users should make sure that their systems are patched up as much as possible and that they have good security software deployed. Reliable anti-phishing technology, antivirus, anti-spam, anti-spyware, the gamut, those are always the best precautions for any end user to deploy.
Hey, thanks, Ben. That was helpful. And what I would like to do is mention the folks that you can find out more about the Symantec products over at www.symantec.com. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
All right.
Let me know if you think this segment is worthwhile. Send your feedback to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. Up next, IT News from The Wire here on Redmond Radio. Thanks once again for listening to Redmond Radio. If you enjoy listening to this program and staying informed with what's happening in IT, please pass this show around to your colleagues. Before we get to the newswire, a few notes regarding what's online on the Redmond Media Group websites. Check out the October 2007 issue of Redmond Magazine, which includes insights from the Windows IT gurus. And in Redmond Channel Partner, how partners can prepare for the big Microsoft software launches coming in 2008. Over at Redmond Developer News, how wireless is complicating the web development space. And finally, a reminder to listen all the way to the end of the podcast for details on how to enter our weekly Redmond t-shirt giveaway. Now, here's what's popped up on the AP Newswire last week. SAP plans to buy Business Objects, the largest supplier of BI software, for $6.7 billion. The company has announced the deal early last week. Business Objects will operate as a standalone business unit of SAP. If a larger bidder doesn't emerge and the deal goes through, SAP will integrate its NetWeaver BI platform with Business Objects BI platform. SAP said Business Objects will also continue to its support of other software platforms, though it remains to be seen how Business Objects customers and developers are affected under the new corporate parent. Business Objects has its own hooks into Microsoft software and the .NET environment. Last year, Business Objects integrated its Crystal Excelsius workgroup data visualization solution with SQL Server reporting services. Later in the week, Oracle made an offer to buy BEA Systems for $6.7 billion. Oracle unveiled its $17 per share cash offer last Friday, but BEA has initially rejected it in the belief that the company is worth more. A research note from Goldman Sachs analysts Sarah Friar and Derek Bingham said they believed Oracle can afford to pay more than $20 per share, or about $8 billion, and still make money on the deal. Oracle's takeover attempt comes less than a month after investor Carl Icahn announced a large stake in BEA in hopes of forcing a sale of the troubled software maker. Around the world, internet users are conducting about 1.4 million searches every minute, most of them through Google, a new ComScore study estimates. Yet, Baidu.com is still strong enough in China and NHN Corporation in South Korea to crack the global top five in ComScore's inaugural report on worldwide search patterns. According to ComScore's QSearch 2.0 service, more than 37 billion searches worldwide went through Google in August. That's about 60% of all searches, higher than Google's 50% in the U.S. Yahoo was second worldwide with 8.5 billion, followed by Baidu at 3.3 billion, and Microsoft at 2.2, and NHN at 2 billion. In China, Baidu shows how one regional player can break into the top five globally by their complete control of a very, very large market, said Bob Ivins, ComScore's executive vice president. Ivins believes Baidu's numbers will continue to go up. While we're on the subject of China, an international media rights group called on the country's government to loosen controls on news and personal expression on the internet, saying its system of censorship is an insult to the spirit of online freedom. Reporters Without Borders said in a statement last Wednesday, with less than a year to go to the Olympic Games, there is an urgent need for the government to stop blocking thousands of websites, censoring online news, and imprisoning internet users. The Paris-based group also released an investigative report on China's internet controls, written by a Chinese technician who wished to remain anonymous. The technician lists 12 examples of government directives to web portals from May and June of last year, ordering them to purge specific news items or topics from their sites, or telling them to post government-approved content. China's government promotes internet use, but it also has set up an extensive surveillance and filtering system to prevent citizens from accessing material considered obscene or politically subversive. Back to some IT news. HP is offering its business technology optimization solutions as both an on-premises installation solution and as a hosted solution delivered via software as a service. The purpose of the company's business technology optimization software is to align a company's IT support with its business goals. In the case of SaaS, HP got into that technology in a big way when it purchased Mercury Interactive for $4.5 billion in a deal that closed last November. One of the components that Mercury Interactive brought to the table was a very mature software-as-a-service business, said Mark Olson, vice president of SaaS for HP. And finally, in a related news item, Carly Fiorina, the former CEO of HP, has signed on as a contributor with Fox News Business News Channel that just launched this week. Fiorina was one of corporate America's most divisive figures during nearly 6 years at HP. Fox did not specify her role at the new channel. And that's this week's episode of Redmond Radio. Next week, we'll have some news from the Tech Mentor Show taking place in Las Vegas. And before we go, I'd like to remind faithful Redmond Radio listeners that you can win a Redmond t-shirt in my weekly t-shirt giveaway. To enter, just send me an email at mdomingo@1105media.com with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line of your message. This week's t-shirt winner is Mark V. out in the 909. Thanks to Mark for listening to the show, and congratulations on winning the t-shirt this week. And good luck to the rest of you next time. That's it for this episode of Redmond Radio. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to once again offer my thanks to Case for sponsoring this episode. You can find out more about them and their K-Box security appliances at kace.com. As well, I want to thank listeners for their continued support of Redmond Radio through your continued streaming and downloading of this program. See you here next week.